Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Well, it seems no matter where you go in Greater Boston, you'll find construction going on. In some neighborhoods, even the most prudent of economists describe what's happening as a boom. Take Kendall Square in Cambridge, for example. City officials are considering plans for 1 million square feet of new development, and that's on top of the more than $1 billion Kendall Square development plan submitted by MIT. There's also Boston Seaport, where the latest plans involve a 500,000-square-foot mixed-use luxury condominium building proposed at the site of the former Anthony's Pier 4 restaurant. So what does all this development mean for this area? And how can officials make sure that this growth doesn't overwhelm? Well, joining us in the studio to talk about this is Larry Field. He's Deputy Executive Director of the Massachusetts Smart Growth Alliance. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Also on the line is Tom Andrews. He's Executive Vice President of Alexandria Real Estate Equities, and that's a California-based real estate company with a large footprint in Kendall Square. Its projects include buildings, housing, Biogen, and Novartis. Tom Andrews, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much.
And listeners, we want to hear from you. How would you like to see Kendall Square or the Seaport District in Boston grow? And what makes a good new neighborhood? Tell us about what's going on in your neighborhood as well. Are you concerned about the growth, or do you think that this is all good for the area? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter at Radio Boston. So, Larry, I'd like to start with you. First off, how do you define smart growth in such diverse areas as Kendall Square and the Seaport District? And is there sort of an overarching principle, really, for figuring out what is smart here and how do we deal with this boom?
Right. So smart growth is about mixed use, mixed income, vibrant, great places to live, work, and play. And the kinds of things that you look at are the physical attributes of the neighborhood. And you also look at the intangible aspects. Is there street life? What's the way in which the community interacts with each other? And that's the frame in which we would judge new neighborhoods.
Okay. But it almost sounds, it's a little general, and it almost sounds utopian, because do we see, is there an example right now of a mixed-use, mixed-income area that's thriving, that's not really gentrified or exclusive?
Right. So there are examples of new neighborhoods that have those attributes. But when you say, when I say mixed income, I don't mean that it is a place that is utopian in the amount of mixed income, but has at least a healthy amount of affordable housing for people who are lower moderate income incomes, and also people who are in the middle income.
Mm-hmm. I want to go to you, Tom. Tell me from a developer's perspective, what makes Cambridge so attractive?
Well, you know, Cambridge is you know, first of all, has two world-class research universities.
I think I've heard of them.
I haven't. And because of that, they've drawn over the past couple of decades a really strong science and technology community that is, you know, seeking to commercialize the discoveries that are made at these universities and to hire the workforce that is being generated by Harvard and MIT. And so the confluence of all those things has caused a lot of demand for commercial laboratory and office space, particularly in Kendall Square. And you know, as Larry was saying, you know, we need to practice smart growth in a place like Kendall Square to make it you know, to have it continue to be the very appealing place it is for innovators of all types, you know, companies and individuals. And so, you know, we've tried to do that in our development activities in the square.
And so how have you tried to do that? We do know that, for example, that Cambridge City Councilors are considering a plan where the fees that developers would pay for affordable housing would triple. So your per square foot fee that goes into a fund to help keep the area affordable, that would triple under this proposal that's now before Cambridge City Councilors. Is that something that you think is a good idea, or could that really affect you in a detrimental way and possibly affect the growth that's going on there?
Well, I think that, you know, it has to be looked at in balance. You know, in our development, Alexandria Center at Kendall Square, which is a large development along Binney Street, in a corner of Kendall Square that used to be, you know, parking lots and obsolete industrial buildings, we went through a process with the city over a couple of year period, about 4 or 5 years ago, where we worked on, you know, designing or master planning this development and coming up with, you know, really listening to the community, meeting with the neighbors, meeting with the politicians and city councilors and folks who, you know, were responsible for addressing our proposal. And we came up with, you know, multiple benefits that have gone to the community, including, a two-acre park and the preservation of some existing historic properties and a commitment to having street-level retail and new sidewalks and cycle tracks for the biking community, improved drainage and infrastructure in the area, and in addition to all that, a commitment to a higher than standard level of affordable housing in the portion of the project that we committed to build housing in. We're principally a developer of laboratory and office space, but in going through this process with the city, we did agree, and we thought it was a good idea, to build a portion of the development as housing. And we see other developers now in Kendall Square, you know, doing the same. And, you know, that's part of the vibrancy and the smart growth that you want to have in a place that's well served by transit and which is, you know, close to a huge economic engine like MIT. So whether, you know, a tripling of the affordable housing fee is the right answer or not, I think the city, the city of Cambridge, the city of Boston, other cities and communities that address these issues need to, you know, think carefully about you know, the overall benefit they get and how, you know, which type of benefit they'd like to prioritize. I mean, if our affordable housing fees were very much higher, or our affordable housing requirement was very much higher, then some of the other benefits that we were able to provide as part of the development, you know, might not have been feasible. So I think the city has to look at it in a balanced fashion.
Okay, I want to take some calls because our phone lines are lighting up here. Peter is calling from Cambridge. Peter, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. I would remind people of the West End and the destruction that was wrought there. And families were scattered to and fro, never repaired. 1995, when rent control was ended, and the same thing happened, there was suddenly a whole class of people that were shut out of Cambridge, becoming a gated community, and then this chatter of putting up a 500-foot skyscraper in Kendall Square. And think a moment how the poor in projects must feel with all of this rising like a big wave alongside them, you know? That's just despicable.
Peter, do you live in Cambridge? Do you live in Cambridge?
Yes, I do. I happen to have a place on Harvard Street worth an absolute bundle, and I'm leaving. I've loved Cambridge, but even Toronto, where I partially spend my time, it's now so full of high-rises I can't even remember what was there. I'm moving to the North Country in northwestern Massachusetts to simply get away from it. The gentrification is the most depressing thing I've seen since I've been here.
Are you moving because you don't like the high-rises, or are you moving because of the cost?
I don't like the disruption of the community, and I walk very early in the morning, and I have come to know a lot of poor people.
Okay, Peter, thanks very much for calling. I think, Tom, I want you to address that. I mean, there's someone who is leaving Cambridge who's been there for quite some time, and he's leaving because he says there are lots of high-rises and he doesn't like the quality of life there anymore. What do you say about that, Tom Andrews?
Well, you know, I'd say that some people, you know, like cities and the density associated with them and the interaction, and some people prefer a quieter place, and maybe that's just different strokes for different folks.
You know, right before we heard from him, heard from our caller, we were talking about the overall benefit and the other benefits that you bring to the community like Cambridge. I'm wondering, how do you balance, though, keeping an area affordable and open and accessible to people, and also developing it and taking advantage of all of the scientific and technological advances that are happening there? How do you do that, Tom?
Well, look, I think it is a challenging a balance, and you know, affordability is very much a regional problem here and in some other regions of this country and other countries. You know, gentrification or the you know, the pricing of real estate so that it can't be afforded by many is absolutely a problem that exists in many parts of the country. We've tried, and I think the Cambridge city government is pretty diligent about this, but we've tried to make some balance or some arrangements that will cause at least some percentage of the housing stock to remain affordable for those of lesser means. There are government programs. We are a free market economy, so to a large extent, that sometimes causes these problems. And people, I think, companies, businesses, technologists, entrepreneurs want to be in places like Cambridge where there's a vibrancy and a connectivity that is very important to their own success, and sometimes that leads to the type of development boom that we're having now. It is a balancing act.
Larry Field, I want you to weigh in on this, obviously.
Sure.
Because this is what you study, right? This balancing act of how to keep areas affordable and grow smartly. What do you say to this and to folks' concerns about keeping these areas affordable?
Right. So places like Kendall Square are an exciting opportunity that we have because of the real change in the dynamics of the real estate market. We now have people who want to live in walkable urban places. And places like Kendall Square, instead of being basically suburban campuses for offices, can be housing, retail, restaurants, and the R&D that is in Kendall Square. And there are strategies, the two principal ones being inclusionary zoning and the other being linkage fees, that are used by cities to try to provide as much affordable housing in the city as possible. So with the inclusionary zoning, it is developers who are building the housing itself, having in Cambridge, in return for a density bonus, to devote 11.5% of the housing to deed-restricted affordable housing. It's also the linkage fees, which are fees that go to commercial developers, and that's put into a trust fund so that the city can build affordable housing in the neighborhood or elsewhere in the city.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about something that's come up often about development in Kendall Square in particular, and that is the amount of residential development that's happening. It's always been a debate that even with MIT coming forward with its plans for development in Kendall Square, many folks say there just simply is not enough housing for all of the MIT graduate students in particular, and that, of course, gets into the affordable housing debate as well. And I'm wondering, Tom Andrews, if you could tell me, is it true, because some folks say that there is not enough housing because it's so much more lucrative to develop non-residential versus residential housing. What is it from a developer's perspective? Is it much more lucrative to go with commercial versus residential development?
Well, I think that depends on exactly where you are and the zoning and so forth that is in the district that you're operating in. And sometimes the zoning gets very specific block by block. But I will say that in Cambridge, most of the new projects that we're seeing proposed, including MIT's and the one that we have under construction currently, have you know, a significant component of residential associated with them. And that's a city, you know, city's taken that policy. And I think that developers who, you know, control land, particularly in Kendall Square, are acknowledging that, you know, some significant percentage of the property that they develop will likely be residential. I think it is true that in Kendall Square, anyhow, you know, if there were no requirement for residential, the value of development of commercial space is right now higher than it is for residential. That isn't always the case, but it is at the moment.
Okay. I'd like to take another call. Kyle is calling from Watertown. Kyle, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, Kyle, you're on the air.
Oh, it's not Kyle, it's Pat. I'm sorry.
Okay, Pat.
My concern is, on the larger scale, the displacement that's happening. So many people are moving into Cambridge. They can't afford Cambridge. They move to Somerville. I've been placed out of JP because you can't get a one-bedroom condo for less than $500,000. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm in Watertown, and I fear I'm going to be displaced to Waltham. There's a larger ripple. And also businesses, it's gone from being local businesses to chain businesses. I mean, Central Square is a fraction of what it once was in terms of its sort of funky vibe. And the Kendall development has a lot to do with that. Is there a way to address that before Boston becomes closer to Manhattan, the theme park that that's become?
Okay, that's a good question. Pat, we're going to let our experts answer that question for you. Larry, how do we make sure Boston doesn't turn into a theme park and retains a funky vibe, if you will, and that this ripple effect of folks moving out and getting displaced, that it's contained somehow?
Right. So first we have to understand why there is that effect. And we have more demand than there is supply of housing in the greater Boston area. And that's because we underbuilt for decades, and we built a different kind of home than we have demanded now. So the large lot, suburban, single family is what we built in the 1990s and the beginning of this century. And now what we have demand for are walkable urban places, making Boston, Cambridge, Somerville very attractive places. And so the solution to that is in part increasing supply of that kind of housing, and in part it's trying to do the kinds of things that create opportunities for those who can't afford those prices. So the things that we were talking about, things like the inclusionary zoning requirement, the linkage fees, but also in places like Kendall Square, the city has required, and the proposal for the Volpe Center includes trying to set aside small retail places.
We should say the Volpe Transportation Building is a 14-acre site
yes.
in Cambridge, right near where all of this development is going on. And there's talk for the first time that the federal government may be on board with developing this somehow, and that 14 acres may fit into this development boom. But it's still too early to say exactly how. But there is some talk of a mixed-use facility there. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
So there is a rezoning proposal that was recommended by Cambridge Planning Board, and that would increase the amount of density there, and would also provide some of the other things that would try to keep the this proposal in balance. So part of it is a requirement that 40% of it be housing. It is trying to limit the amount of parking, to try to find a way to increase the public transit use, biking and walking. And the proposal that I was talking about small retail places and innovation spaces, is designed to keep part of what is attractive about the neighborhoods in Cambridge.
Okay. I'd like to take another call. Dave is calling from Brighton. Dave, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Just a quick question.
Mm.
I know when Menino was mayor, there was a lot of talk about micro apartments. I was just wondering what developers think the future of 300 to 400 square foot apartments are.
Okay, good question. Larry, whatever happened to micro apartments? We did hear about them a couple of years ago. They were supposed to, you know, sort of help with our demand for housing. Are they still there? Where did they go?
Oh, they're still there. And I believe that some of the buildings in the South Boston waterfront do have micro units. Micro units are one particular idea it's good to have some small percentage of those in the places that are appropriate for it. But micro units are really not the solution to this problem.
Okay. And I'm just wondering, Tom, is there any sort of creative, micro unit-like thing that you have heard of that Alexandria Real Estate Equities has heard of in its development that you think might help be a potential solution to this debate about affordable housing? Almost all of the calls that we've gotten so far today have dealt with how do we keep these neighborhoods affordable in the midst of this development boom. So what are some of the sort of new innovative ways that you've heard about, Tom, that folks are trying to deal with this issue?
Well, certainly micro units is one that has drawn some attention. As I said earlier, we're not housing developers generally. We do science and technology campuses for companies generally, but we do see other developers proposing some of these micro units that, as Larry said, they're appealing to some small segment of the population, maybe kind of an immediately post-college or post-grad school segment. And, I think that one of the things that's maybe a little bit underappreciated about the current development boom, Larry was saying that, we under developed for a number of years. We didn't build much housing, or we built a lot of housing in the suburbs. And there's a lot of housing under development right now, and not all of it is in the market yet. And when it all gets in the market, I think there'll be a rebalancing and a pricing, or potentially a repricing that reflects the fact that the supply in the market has risen to meet the demand that's there. And, that may cause, rents to flatten or even fall at some point. I mean, I don't think the business cycle has been repealed. I think we've seen a boom in supply. Maybe it's enough, maybe it isn't enough to cause rents to fall in the future. But, there's at least a potential that it could. That's the market at work.
Okay, we are going to have to end on that note. Tom Andrews, Executive Vice President of Alexandria Real Estate Equities, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
Also, Larry Field, Deputy Executive Director of the Massachusetts Smart Growth Alliance. Larry, thanks for coming in. Stay with us. This is Radio Boston.